One of the more remarkable developments here on Earth in astrobiology is the sheer number of new ways that have been recently thought of in how and where we might look for both biosignatures of life itself, but also technosignatures of alien civilizations. So here are 10 interesting recent developments in astrobiology that might further our search for other life in the universe. Number 10. Enceladus Methane. Of all the ice shell moons in the solar system that could in principle support life, Europa and Saturn's moon Enceladus stand apart, both because their subsurface oceans are within the realm of accessibility and investigation, but also because both of these moons bear hints that there may be life in their oceans. Enceladus took a step forward recently on this count. A few years ago, the plumes of water ice streaming from fissures in the moon's ice shell were found to contain all the nutrients needed for life, and indeed some indication of geologic processes such as geothermal vents on Enceladus's ocean floor. While not proven to exist, only hinted at, such vents could serve as ready energy sources for life, such as oceanic vents do here on Earth. But there has been another recent development. The plumes streaming from Enceladus and indeed Europa give scientists direct access to water originating from the oceans of those moons. That can be studied remotely, and indeed directly. This happened with the Cassini spacecraft, and it discovered a strong signature of methane in the plumes of Enceladus. This is important, given that methane is a biologically produced gas, though unfortunately there are other natural non-living processes that can make it as well. But recently, a team of French and American scientists constructed mathematical models to try to determine what was producing the methane at Enceladus. The models predict that it's either life, consistent with methanogenic microbes around geothermal vents here on Earth, or some unknown methane-producing natural process that isn't anything like what happens here on Earth, giving us a tantalizing hint, perhaps the strongest yet, that Enceladus may have life. Number 9. 1,700 star systems can see us. When pondering the search for extraterrestrial intelligence, the natural thing to ask is, since we're looking for intelligent alien civilizations, are they likewise looking for us? This is a hard question to ponder because there is the possibility that the answer is no. There may be alien civilizations that concluded that intelligent life is so rare that they don't even bother to look, in which case they may never know we're here and don't care if we are. But it's also equally possible, perhaps even more likely, that they are curious and do look. After all, if they've built a civilization based on science and engineering, then some natural curiosity must be at play. So the question becomes, how easy is it to spot us? Well, there are multiple ways it could happen, so long as the alien civilization is close enough to detect us. Further than about 100 light years out, they would see Earth as it was 100 years ago. And going much further back than that, we become undetectable, even though we were already well on our way in developing our civilization here on Earth. But that's because of when our detectable technologies, such as radio, saw their advent. But Earth is obviously much older, and we detect exoplanets, habitable or otherwise, using the transit method, so long as the exoplanets we're looking at happen to line up to the observer to create a transit signature. So how many other known exoplanets can see Earth transit the Sun? This was looked into by Lisa Kaltenegger and colleagues, because vantage points change over the last 5,000 years in our local neighborhood of about 325 light years out. Roughly 1,700 star systems have been in a position to actually spot Earth transiting the Sun, within a total of about 335,000 stars in the Gaia spacecraft data, with about 1,402 still being able to currently spot our world, and 75 of these are close enough to have spotted our radio signals. And transiting exoplanets are excellent candidates to try to characterize and study exoplanet atmospheres as our instrumentation gets increasingly better in the future. If someone out there has done this with a transiting Earth, they would have seen fairly clear evidence of Earth's biosignatures, and may have long suspected that something interesting was going on here. Whether that has in fact happened, and this planet is being watched by an alien civilization from afar, is an open question. Number 8. Artifacts on the Moon. So far, the major way in which SETI has been conducted is through the search for radio signals emanating from alien civilizations. This makes sense to a degree because our own civilization produces all manner of radio signals and they escape into space. But the problem is that they are on the whole very weak as far as interstellar distances go, and only a few times in the past have we sent out truly powerful signals that could be picked up by SETI experiments across the galaxy. One was unintentional, in the form of using radar to map asteroids, and the other, a signal intended for alien civilizations to see, both sent by the now-destroyed Arecibo radio telescope. But all were one-offs, and if the alien scientific bar is the same as ours, they would simply be WOW signals that were only detected once and prove nothing. To go beyond that would be to construct what the original investigators in SETI expected might be found, a giant directional or omnidirectional beacon that could be seen across the entire Milky Way. This has not been found, and there may be a good reason for that. It's simply not worth it to build such a beacon and invest titanic amounts of energy into it, and then long term, as in running it for thousands of years, in hopes that someone else might see it. It's still possible that such a thing might exist, but it's sort of a long shot. This has led to thinking in SETI that there may be far cheaper ways for civilizations to make contact with each other, some of the magnitude of a trillion times less expensive. One way here is the Benford Lurker. The idea here is that an alien civilization might send an artifact at sublight speed, perhaps from a passing star system, and then deposit such artifacts in promising star systems that have habitable exoplanets. In our case, Earth being a very obvious one that's been sitting here for 4.5 billion years. These artifacts may be active and turn on and begin transmitting at some point, or may be passive, like time capsules preserving information and artifacts about the civilization that left them, which could possibly be extinct by the time their artifacts are found, constituting not a technosignature, but a necrosignature. Obvious places to look for such artifacts might include collection points where Jupiter's gravity might cause interstellar objects to congregate that it captures, or co-orbital objects with Earth, or even the surface of the moon or buried beneath it, where such artifacts might last for billions of years, waiting to be discovered by humans. Number 7. Super-rotating oceans. One of the biggest hits to the possibility of life in the universe in recent years has been seemingly ever-lowering chances of life developing on exoplanets within the habitable zones of red dwarf stars. Among the many problems that have been realized about the most abundant class of star in the universe is that early in their lives they tend to be volatile flare stars. The other problem has been tidal locking, where exoplanets within the habitable zone of these tiny stars are so close in that they tidally lock, showing only one face towards their stars. Much like the moon is tidally locked to Earth and only shows one side to us. This problem of tidal locking has created problems for envisioning how life might evolve on these worlds, specifically in that conventional wisdom would suggest that one side of the planet is always getting baked and the other frozen, leaving at best a temperate twilight zone at the edges of light and dark that might allow for a chance. But that has recently been called into question, and oceans and life around these worlds may be aided by a different factor, super-rotating oceans. We clearly live on a planet that can transfer heat around. It's tilted and rotates and is unevenly heated. Yet ocean currents, the atmosphere, etc. move heat around. So why couldn't this happen on a tidally locked world? It could, but it must do it faster than the tidally locked planet rotates, meaning that the ocean currents on those worlds must super-rotate to move heat to the cool side and expand the exoplanet's habitability. But Venus and several other bodies in the solar system, and occasionally even Earth, show us that this is possible with atmospheric super-rotation. But on a tidally locked exoplanet orbiting a red dwarf, you're going to need the ocean currents doing it. Recent modeling has shown this is actually quite possible if you get the right winds and conditions. And you might have super-rotating oceanic currents on these kinds of exoplanets, broadening the way for life to arise on those worlds. But it's also situational. For example, if the continents on the exoplanets are arranged in a bad way, should continents be common things in the universe, which they very likely are, they could alter or stop those currents entirely. So however it might work, it's going to be very different for every exoplanet. Number 6. The Alpha Centauri A exoplanet. The nearest star system to us, the Alpha Centauri system, has been the focus of recent research regarding a roughly Earth-sized planet within the habitable zone of one member of the system, the closest one, Proxima Centauri. This exoplanet, Proxima b, takes the record as the closest known to us. But there have also been suspicions that the two other members of the Alpha Centauri system may also host worlds, and both of those stars are not red dwarfs and do not suffer from the problems associated with red dwarf exoplanets and life. It's made up of a Class G star like the Sun and a Class K orange dwarf. Now, it appears that the Type G member of the system has a planet within its habitable zone, though a planet very different from Earth. It appears, at least initially, to be about the size of Neptune, and the planet is still unconfirmed, being discovered as a heat signature by the European Southern Observatory's NEAR project. But given the proximity of the Alpha Centauri system, this planet, along with Proxima b and another candidate further out from the red dwarf, will no doubt be among the best candidates we have for at least characterizing the atmospheres of other worlds. Number 5. The BLC1 radio signal. Last year, a signal was detected by the Breakthrough Listen project that was rather unusual for a SETI signal in that it made it past all the filters in place at the time and took its place as the first candidate signal of that project, hence Breakthrough Listen Candidate 1. The signal was needle thin, which is what you would expect from any technological alien signal or interference from Earth, and seemed to emanate from the direction of the Proxima Centauri system, the closest one to Earth. Though this was only a general direction rather than a direct detection from that system. It was also suspected from the start that the signal was some kind of interference from Earth, especially since it was picked up near a very arbitrary human frequency number based on Hertz, which is our own 60-second intervals aliens would know nothing about. It was only odd that it made it past so many filters designed to eliminate such interference. The signal was later shown to convincingly be a matter of Earth interference, and signals like it were spotted at different frequencies, but with similar characteristics. The exact source, to my knowledge, isn't yet known, but this one has left the stage as a candidate for an alien signal. But it's still useful in that it shows yet another type of interference that can create a false positive in SETI that is really of Earthly origin. This allows for further filtering to be designed to catch this type of interference as a known Earthly signal. One of these days, however, a signal may come through that passes the filters but cannot be attributed to Earth interference, but rather, more likely, a signal from an alien civilization. Number 4. The origins of RNA. One of the biggest questions within the science of figuring out the origins of life, what sequence of events happened to produce RNA, which is thought to have happened before the advent of DNA, and in fact may have been involved in the creation of the latter. But the origin of RNA is obscured, and is thought to have been related to something that happened in an abiotic chemical process. What exactly that is remains a mystery, but we might now know more. The Miller-Urey experiments and successors have shown that biologically related molecules can arise from non-biological chemical processes, but there's always been an open question of whether they might have been a missing link, some abiotically produced precursor to RNA that led to RNA itself. Recently, some hints at a chemical pathway were found by researchers at the Georgia Institute of Technology that get closer to looking like RNA and ordered genetic information, rather than the chaos of some very complicated chemistry. Cracking the nut of just how RNA and ultimately DNA came into existence is going to be of the utmost importance to astrobiology, and it's something that can be done here on Earth in the laboratory. We may well know the answer to these questions in coming years or decades, and we will be able to not only say that the process is either straightforward and probably happens all over the universe, or is very rare and difficult and a matter more of chance that may not be common at all, but also give us clues on what specific conditions are present on exoplanets that might make them good candidates for life to exist, or even eventually arise. Number 3. Superhabitable candidates. One of the more interesting ideas that has come up in our exploration of exoplanets is the idea that Earth may not actually be the ideal world for life to exist, and that there may be planets out there better than Earth. There are multiple ways that this can be envisioned. For example, what of a better star? Our Sun is really mischaracterized, we have tended to see it as a moderately long-lived type G yellow dwarf. Well, here's the thing. It's not yellow, and it's not a dwarf. It's rather large for a star in comparison to most other stars. It's more like a white giant, and is increasing in luminosity as it ages, meaning that its ability to support life on Earth will end much sooner than its red giant phase. It will bake this planet in about 600 million years, and that will be it for life as we know it. It will become a microbial planet once again for a while, but even then that comes to an end at the hands of the increasingly luminous sun. In short, we're stuck next to a monster that had a long enough quiet phase for life and a civilization to arise, but not for long. If indeed the aliens of the galaxy work on much longer timescales than we do, our first SETI message may be from a frantic galactic community offering to send bottled water and hold a million-year-long bake sale to fund our evacuation to a better star. And then there is Earth. It's actually pretty easy to imagine a planet better than Earth, but also not that dissimilar. One can imagine slightly larger worlds, as far as surface area, that can have more landmass distributed over a greater number of smaller continents. The interiors of continents and past supercontinents on Earth tend to be deserts, so what of a bunch of smaller ones with better access to water? Or a larger planet, with a longer-lived molten core, making for better magnetic fields? Or how about different oceans? Earth's oceans get less habitable the deeper they get, yet life abounds in shallow waters, so what of a planet with shallower oceans? How about a planet around a long-lived orange dwarf that's older than Earth, and had a much longer stable period for life to evolve and thrive? How about temperatures? Is it possible to have a better temperature mix on a planet than Earth has? The list goes on. So have we ever found any candidates for superhabitability? The answer is yes. There are actually 24 recently identified candidates. They're all sort of ambiguous. We really are still in the infancy of characterizing exoplanets, but a few stand out. One is KOI-57515.01, which is a super-Earth, but not one so huge as to probably not be habitable. It's older than Earth by a billion years, and enjoys an orange dwarf as its host star. This would lead to comfortable surface temperatures, but a bit cold. However, we don't know anything about its atmosphere, so that may allow for warmer temperatures and thus superhabitability. Another is KOI-5554.01, which is like a much older Earth, similarly sized, around another yellow dwarf. Though maybe that's not such a good option, even though it seems to support comfortable temperatures. As more study continues and more candidates come to light, this idea of superhabitability may become one of the hottest issues in astrobiology, especially if biosignatures are found associated with one. Number 2. SETI and FAST. One of the more important developments within radio astronomy in recent years has been China's development and construction of their 500-meter FAST radio telescope. This enormous telescope promises to provide a significant increase in global radio telescope capability for science. But there's always been the question of what China might do with it in regards to SETI. This plan is forming up and seems to constitute a solid effort in the field. So FAST 2 will join the search for extraterrestrial intelligence. But as we've seen with space exploration, and indeed the geopolitical ramifications of that, along with nation-state rivalry, the question is how this would affect any effort in being the first country to find an alien signal. Who makes the discovery first? Because of the nature of SETI, this is going to be difficult, because it almost has to be a global team effort. If a signal is picked up, geographical location becomes key in confirming it, because to do that requires radio telescopes across the globe to very quickly turn their attention to such a signal before it disappears. And if it's only seen once, it may be interesting, but it doesn't answer any questions. This leaves certain targeted searches that can be searched for again by the same telescope that might be kept secret for a time. But even then, confirmation of such a signal is going to be needed. But, as with anything regarding SETI, the more the merrier, and it's a good thing that FAST is going to look into answering one of the greatest questions we humans have. Are we alone? Number 1. Hydrogen worlds. A huge question about just where life might exist and arise in the universe involves biases and certain realities. One of these is just what we consider a habitable atmosphere, in which we tend to look at our own atmospheric mix. But Earth's atmosphere was not always like this, and indeed, early on when life first appeared, it was radically different and did not contain the oxygen levels it has now. That was a result of life. So what other sorts of exoplanet atmospheres might also host life? One is pure hydrogen. Researchers recently experimented with E. coli and various species of yeast to see if they could survive in a hydrogen atmosphere. They didn't do as well and grew more slowly, but survive and reproduce they did. This opens the way for rocky planets with hydrogen-rich atmospheres to be on the list of candidates for life, and even certain biosignatures, even though they aren't particularly Earth-like in their atmospheric makeup. Thanks for listening. I am futurist and science fiction author John Michael Godier. Be sure to check out my books at your favorite online book retailer and subscribe to my channels for regular, in-depth explorations into the interesting, weird, and unknown aspects of this amazing universe in which we live.